Welcome to Screen Talk, IndieWire's weekly movie podcast. I'm Eric Cohn, the executive editor and chief critic, joined as always by Ann Thompson, our editor at large. And if you happen to be watching the video version of this podcast, you'd see that I'm already on the red carpet for Cannes. It looks like Cannes 2019, but I promise you, I got up for the lineup at 4:45 a.m. New York time.
It was 2 a.m. for me.
And I've been here ever since. What about you? You got back to L.A.
I listened to the whole press conference, Sherry Fremo, you know, going on.
63 movies.
And then forgetting half the selection, including the Sean Penn movie.
Well, maybe they confirmed it right then and there. We don't know.
I don't know. He was a little frazzled, it seemed to me. And then you, Eric, you asked the big money question about Netflix. I was very proud of you. He looked at your text.
Wasn't in the room. Let's be honest. I am not actually a fan.
IndieWire. He wants to know what's going on with Netflix. And he answered you.
Well,
and
that's
he gave
because,
you a money angry quote.
Well, let's start with that, right? Because this is one of the bigger picture issues here. Up until the last minute, we don't know the Cannes lineup because Cannes actually finalizes the lineup famously into the wee hours of the night. They're screening things. We had films that were surprises, like Sean Baker's film Red Rocket, that we didn't know was going to be ready until a few days ago, apparently. So they're always doing this stuff. And a few days ago, it wasn't clear, is Netflix going to bring this movie? There were conflicting reports about will Jane Campion be in this new Cannes premiere section or whatever. And then there were no Netflix films. And the reality is, even if the journalists in the room didn't acknowledge that because they're not necessarily processing everything in real time, when I saw that, I realized this is still a significant aspect of the growth of Cannes and Netflix and film culture that has not been properly sorted out. They're not speaking the same language.
Oh, no, I don't think that's it at all. I think Terry Frumo is angry about it because he wanted them to settle for out of competition so that he could have Jane Campion, the auteur who won the Palme d'Or, the only woman who has ever done so for the piano. But the reason that that couldn't happen from the Netflix side was that she's Jane Campion and she should be in the fucking competition.
Well, there's
you can't
that.
Just say she's out of competition because it's convenient.
Right, it's an issue.
So this
it's
is
an
where
issue.
The two forces collided. And
but this is exactly what I mean. This is exactly what I mean in terms of not speaking the same language because Netflix is not going to.
No, they know the language. They're just each of them has their own needs.
Yeah, but exactly. They're working in with different rules.
I don't think
it's
basically a question of not knowing the language, honestly.
Let me elaborate a little bit. French culture has not yet adapted to the kind of paradigms that Netflix works within. You can't have a day and date kind of thing where it's like maybe they put it in one or two theaters in Paris at the same time it hits Netflix. Not happening. They want a real theatrical release for these movies in competition in France.
It isn't just that Thierry wants that. It's that the French government and culture.
The exhibitors. It goes through Parliament.
And he cannot argue with it.
That's the disconnect.
So in a way, what he's saying is my buddy Ted Sarandos didn't come through for me and put Jane Campion in out of competition status. And if I were Netflix, I wouldn't let her be out of competition either. She can go to Venice. She can go somewhere else.
Seems that it is heading
you're
that
right.
Way.
France is the one with the antediluvian arcane regulations.
Different. It's a different worldview, a different value set.
Thierry was angry about it. That's
yeah, it's frustrating. It's frustrating.
How he answered your story.
But it is. It is. So, I mean, what is this? 4 years after all this stuff blew up, when there was Meyerowitz stories and. And Okja in competition, and there was such severe backlash.
And
so
Almodovar was upset, and
right. So Cannes tried it, and we saw what happened. So the culture has not figured out a way to reconcile these differences, and
well,
it's unfortunate.
He has figured it out when Spike Lee was willing to do Defy Odds out of competition and be head of the jury. It was all people were all singing Kumbaya. Now it's a different story with Jane Campion. That's what it amounts to,
which
it
is unfortunate.
It could be worked out next year with another filmmaker who was willing to go out of competition. But I could see why Netflix went this way. Why should Campion give herself a lesser status as a woman director who's won the Palme d'Or?
Well, and
absolutely
so this.
Definitely not.
This brings us to another issue, right? Four women directors in competition with 24 films in competition is not a great number for a festival that's been fighting to say, hey, we're going to be better about this, right? And five wouldn't have been helpful.
But, right. Yeah. Absolutely.
So it's unfortunate. But outside of the Netflix thing, there's a bunch of other stuff to take a look at. I mean, we don't see a ton of big studio movies here in general, but we do see some pretty intriguing American films. I mentioned Sean Baker. There's also Sean Penn, which you mentioned up top was a sort of a late addition. The last time Sean Penn was in competition at Cannes didn't go so well with The Last Face. And I think that was sort of a late addition that wasn't maybe screened in time or something to that effect. We never got the whole story.
It didn't go well at all.
So...
yeah, no, there's some really good movies. I mean, some of them we already knew about. The Leos Carax Annette, which is the opening night.
Can't wait.
Cannot wait. You know, Benedetta, the Paul Verhoeven that's already gone to IFC. Very excited. The Sexy Nun movie. I am interested in Mia Hansen-Love, speaking of a woman director, finally getting into competition at long last.
Into Cannes in general, yeah.
Bergman Island. So what festivals has she gone to in the past?
Berlin and TIFF and Venice and all these, but
why
official Cannes selection.
Cannes before? What was the... Isn't,
I couldn't tell you all the internal like politics, right? And, I mean, yeah. that is true that her ex-husband, Olivier Assayas, maybe there's something there. I'm not going to over speculate about the real world context of this movie about a filmmaker couple who go on vacation and stuff happens, but maybe there's something there. I do think that
Tim Roth and Vicky Creeps. I'm looking.
Yeah, we've been hearing about this movie for a long time. She's an amazing director. She's a very subtle director, and she hasn't made a lot of movies. So you could argue that, statistically speaking, maybe it just hasn't ever quite lined up right, but there's probably some other stuff going on that's not so great.
She has checking out when we get over there, because we're gonna be there.
That's the plan.
Can
everyone keeps asking
somebody
who's
prevents
going.
Us somehow
we'll
forcibly
see.
And we could
we'll
end up
eat
getting
our word.
Stuck over there for all
Look,
we know.
I will gladly acknowledge that I was being naive about this if for some reason I can't go, but it's very exciting to go through this process of looking at all these films and thinking about
a lot to talk about. A lot to look at. So there's a Francois Ozon movie, Everything Went Fine. There's The French Dispatch, which we've all been looking forward to. I can't wait to see the Asghar Farhadi, A Hero, where he returns to Iran. Why
for the first
is that
time in
movie
a while.
So much? That could be a real Oscar submission, for example.
Yeah, Amazon picked it up and is putting it out in the fall, just like
why,
they did Salesman.
Why is that so secret?
Well, I couldn't tell you. I mean, maybe we'll find out when we see it. But what I would say is that he's a kind of storyteller where if you know some aspects of the plot, it can kind of ruin the experience because it's so intricate and subtle and it tends to build around certain revelations. So maybe the plot synopsis for this movie ruins some aspect about it. That would be my only thinking. I don't think it's like a surprise Marvel movie or something crazy. You know, it's like, it's something like that.
He's a remarkable filmmaker. He's been experimenting in other languages. I'm so glad he's going back to Iran. And that I have to say, that's actually one of the things I'm looking forward to the most. There's also, I'm going to do it, Epichakpong Wirasethakal.
Yeah, it's the closest I've ever heard you come to
Memoria.
Say, Epichakpong Wirasethakal.
I've been practicing.
Not bad.
Tilda Swinton. So that's his first English language movie.
Yeah, he shot in Colombia. It's Tilda with exploding head syndrome, which is a real thing where you hear sudden explosions that aren't really there. There's something to that effect. We've been hearing about that was going to be there last year, and that's Neon has it. So it's kind of cool to see filmmakers like that making this move into more of an English language market, not to say that they weren't amazing filmmakers when they didn't do that, but maybe it'll open them up to some other viewers, like Annette for Carax, for example. I mean, we'll
also,
see.
How do I put this correctly? I have not been on the Justin Kurzel bandwagon. At the press conference, there's a movie called Nitram, at the press in competition, and Terry was just going on about how this is the greatest Australian filmmaker who ever lived, and I'm like, really? Is that true?
He's a very interesting filmmaker. I mean, he, you know, the Snowtown Murders.
What?
Interesting is bland, and I should never use it. I know. I mean, you could slap me around endlessly, but the reality is that he's a filmmaker who always provides a really strong vision. I think, like, you look at the Snowtown Murders, which was his breakout out of Critics Week, or Macbeth. I mean,
there's some skill there.
There's skill, and there's intensity.
Sophisticated, but
yeah, and I think he's
taught.
I think he's wrestling though with you know, certain aspects of Australian society in a way that feels very immediate and contemporary, at least to, you know, Australian critics that I've talked to and so forth. So that may have been what he was tapping into, but I don't know. We'll see. I've never been, you know, over the moon about any of his films, and I'm happy to be proven wrong.
One filmmaker I am over the moon about is Jacques Audiard, and he's back in competition.
Telling me in an interview with Sisters Brothers, he would never come back because he was done. He's like the biggest French director. He doesn't need all that pressure. But then he goes and he makes this movie that's adapted from an Adrien Tamine graphic, not series of short stories, and Celine Sciamma wrote it. And of course it needs Cannes. It's a major French film coming out of a pandemic. So there
never
you have it.
Never. That's what
and it's IFC true. Bought that one. So it's going to have a US release. We're excited.
Red Rocket, what do we know about the Sean Baker movie? It's all non-pros, shot in Texas.
It's about a porn star trying to piece his life together, apparently. So maybe a bit of the Starlet vibes or something to that effect.
He finished it at the last minute.
Yeah, I've heard that some buyers have seen it and that it's, you know, it's a dark comedy of sorts. It's maybe not the same sort of kind of crossover as Florida Project, but in some ways a much more accomplished film. But I haven't seen it, so this is all secondhand. What I do know is this is a great kind of movie to have in competition, because we really did not, and we've been talking about French Dispatch for a year, Memoria for a year, did not know we were going to be gifted a Sean Baker movie out of Cannes.
That was the big surprise this
morning.
It's great
to have that.
Yeah.
How about Titane? I think I'm saying right. Titane from Julia Ducournau, the French director who made Raw, this wild cannibal coming of age story that was a breakout at Cannes
it's
Critics
probably
Week.
Probably Titane if it's in
Titane.
French.
Thank you. Yeah. This is why I can do the Spanish pronunciations, you do the French pronunciations, and we balance out. But that was a movie. Remember, Raw was a movie that went to TIFF and someone fainted or something like that.
I saw that one.
Yeah, it's grotesque but impressive. And this one, I don't know what it's about. Also, Neon has it, but it sounds pretty wild just based on the very vague descriptions you'll find on IMDb. Hey, how about Ildiko and Yeti, who did A Body and Soul? She's back with The Story of My Wife. I'm really curious about that one.
And Joaquin Trier. He's got The Worst Person in the World.
Yep.
And Sean Penn's movie, by the way, is in competition. So he's going for it, man.
He's going for it. That's why I was thinking.
He doesn't have to do that, you know.
Well, also,
Sean Penn can say, put me in with those other auteurs on the other sidebar that doesn't matter.
Yeah. And it would be very unfortunate if this movie is really bad. But I will say that people forget, because of Last Face, that Sean Penn did a really freaking good job adapting Into the Wild.
Great movies.
Yeah, absolutely. And Flag Day is also an adaptation. He's directing
Indian
his
Runner is pretty good.
Family. Yeah, he's a strong director at times. How about Petros Flew from this Russian filmmaker, Kirill Serebennikov, I think is the way you say it. His last film, Leto, was in competition while he was jailed in Russia. And I think he's out of jail now, but it seemed like in the press conference they still weren't really sure if he could make it to the festival. And this is a fascinating film. From what I've heard about it, it's like it's about a family that gets sick, which sounds very timely. And the flu travels through the family and forces them all to kind of hunker down together. And stuff happens. It sounds like it's just a really fascinating window into Russian society.
Like a pandemic.
Exactly.
So on certain regard, whether he was being opportunistic or realistic, it is a lot of lesser known filmmakers in there. I'm curious
about
this Valdemar Johansson Lamb, which has been picked up by one of the distributors. I think it's A24.
Yeah, A24 has a couple of them.
Films.
Icelandic supernatural thriller, and they have After Yang, which is Koganaga's follow-up to Columbus with Colin Farrell. That's like this sci-fi AI story. And Justin Chan, another Sundance director who was there most recently with Ms. Purple, has Blue Bio. So, which sounds a bit like Minari in a way. It's about an immigrant
Korean family.
Well, they have
exquisite taste today, 24. So these are all things, even if we don't know what they are, we should definitely check out. I, for one, want to see what the follow-up is from Pieces of a Woman from Cornel Mundruszko.
It didn't take him long to have one. He just said Pieces of a Woman on the
it's
festival circuit.
It's such an early movie that there's like no information on it online, I was noticing.
Well, I love that, though. I mean, that's the thing is these things really, there's a rawness to this process that you don't usually see with other festivals, and it's messy and it's elitist, but that's kind of what's great about it. It's like, oh, you have a movie ready like yesterday, let's watch it and see if we can add it. They
no,
they could add a 26
organic and rough and ready. Especially this year, you get the sense that Thierry was really riding the surf here. So Andrea Arnold has a movie called Cow, which is a doc, so that's been stuck into this hodgepodge,
the Cannes premiere
thing, which is for auteurs who don't have movies good enough to be in the competition.
Well, I don't know if it's good.
I wouldn't want to be in this category.
I don't know, though. I mean, look, here's the thing about competition, right? Sometimes this comes up when a really good film doesn't play in competition. And my views keep evolving on this, because when you go around Cannes and you have dinner with people after movies, they're like, that movie was amazing, why wasn't it in competition? Which in some ways invalidates the other sections. The idea is that the official selection is all really good movies. They better be. And if they're not, you get mad about
that.
Terry
wants you to
believe. But if it's if all the other sections are not good, then that negates the existence of them to a certain degree. I think it's something else. It's a different curatorial context.
It looks like they're playing around with Certain Regard and leftover competition auteurs, and they figured out a new way to divvy it up.
Yeah, I mean, look, another Hong Sang-soo movie, another Amharic movie. Do we need that conversation again about how they're sucking up competition slots? Or do we put them in a certain regard where people are like, why are you putting it in a certain regard? Or just create another section and explicitly say, these are for people we really respect, who we have back all the time, but we don't want to like minimize their stature. That to me seems like the argument in favor of it. So we got to see the movies, but Cow looks fun. It's about, it's Andrea Arnold making a documentary about cows. I mean,
I'm in. I'm totally in.
Cinephile candy in the most ridiculous way.
On the positive side, Cannes had to lean into docs this year, partly in order to get the celebrities to go with them. So you have Oliver Stone doing some JFK Redux overview, which
is
fine. You know, and it's like 4 hours long or something.
So I'm going to watch it.
And you've got the Val doc.
Val Kilmer doc,
You know, so that's sort of interesting.
I can't wait to see that. His story is wild.
That's going to be a Tribeca. We're going to get to see that earlier.
Yeah, and that's one that Amazon has bought off A24. So there's a real fascinating history with that project.
And then the other one that's interesting to me is the Todd Haynes Velvet Goldmine.
Underground. Goldmine is a movie he also made.
It's the other movie he made.
He had the right idea.
Forgivable lapse there.
Yes.
And then the one that I'm really interested in, the Charlotte Gainsbourg one about
Her mom, Jane Burke. Jane Burke and Jane Jane by Charlotte, something like that. That's such a great name.
It is.
I hope it's good. I mean, it's certainly a personal project for her. So yeah, there's a lot going on there. I mean, the Velvet Underground doc. That one, I remember in Cannes 2019, they were showing footage to buyers. So that's one of those movies where it's like it was ready for this moment. And it's obviously the kind of doc that Cannes would show. Do they have more docs than usual? It seems like it. So that's a good direction.
Way more. They're not all in the competition, though. I mean, you can see that they took Andrew Arnold's Cow and stuck it over here. But Eva Husson has a movie called Mothering Sunday with Colin Firth. Has she been working in English before?
This is her first English language project.
And it's Sony Pictures Classics.
Yeah. So she was at Cannes before, and her film there didn't go over super well.
The one about the women fighters?
The women are fighters in Afghanistan.
With that one.
Yeah. Mothers of the Sun, I believe it was called. But this one is, it's a British production, I believe. And it sounds very different. Yeah. So we'll see. I'm certainly curious about that and about a lot of the ones that are sort of, you know, open questions. I mean, there are filmmakers on here whose names I know, like Karim Enouz, who did Invisible Life, has this film called Mariner of the Mountains, which I only know from Thierry's description in the press conference, is about him, this Brazilian filmmaker, rediscovering his father's African roots and traveling back there. So some kind of essay film, right?
Interesting.
It sounds very interesting.
Not
but you don't really know. You got
to
see
it. Not allowed to use, but provocative.
Yes, provocative. Exactly. We need an interesting jar. It's like a swear jar for every time you say that thing.
So what does it mean that Stillwater, the Tom McCarthy movie, you know, we know who Tom
Matt Damon
is. He directed Spotlight. So this stars Matt Damon, and it's the story. It's a father daughter story. It's Focus, and we've been waiting for this. You know, should have been in the Oscar race last year.
Yeah.
So I'm curious. This is out of competition, and And but apparently Matt Damon is going to be going, and Abigail Breslin is the daughter that he's trying to save. If you look at the trailer, you can see he's a working class guy who leaves Oklahoma to go to France and try to save his daughter.
Well, one thing I did wonder about when I read this in the context of looking at the Cannes lineup is that on paper, it has a fairly similar premise to the Sean Penn movie.
I noticed that.
When we see them, I'm sure that they will be different movies. But that is a question, right? Is that the reason why one is in a different section? Or is it something else that we don't quite know yet? I mean, Tom McCarthy be a good director, not always.
My guess is that this Eva Husson movie, the period British film, and this movie are simply two quote-unquote mainstream for competition. That would be my guess. That they're not, you know...
They're commercial movies. Yeah. You know, it's fascinating how quickly things change in that respect. There was a Variety interview with Thierry a few weeks ago where he said that there was going to be this planetary blockbuster, and we were trying to figure out what that meant. Like, is it Black Widow? Is it Space Jam 2? Like,
he was still hinting at it at the press conference.
But we didn't figure out what it was.
The movies that it wasn't. He said it wasn't West Side Story, and it wasn't Dune, right?
Right, yeah, we expect that in the fall.
A long list of things that it wasn't. I have no idea what it is.
I mean, we know the release calendar when it comes to big movies. There's only so many that it could possibly be. So I'm sure we'll figure that out eventually, or someone will crack it. But it is a fascinating open question. And then it's also worth pointing out that there's a bunch of Cannes that we don't know yet. I mean, sometimes you get these lineups and there'll be like 21 films in competition. Then they add like two or three more or something. They don't seem to be leaning in that direction with this, but we haven't gotten Critics' Week, and we haven't gotten
Director's
Fortnight.
There's always a few American indies in Director's Fortnight and Critics'
Week. Yeah, and those are good sections, usually.
Sean Baker was last time with exactly. The project.
Yeah, and you have people like Joanna Hogg, who's got her sequel to Souvenir Part 2, as well as, I believe, another film she directed, so it's safe to assume at least one of those
things,
could be there.
As you point out in your piece, some of these things will likely turn up in Venice. And yep. And we'll see. I know that Paul Schrader is going to Venice.
That's one good example, yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, Venice was the festival that launched the Oscar winner last year. It's safe to assume that if you have a pretty surefire bet.
This can't even happen.
Yeah, but I can launch Parasite.
I noticed
but...
was really the only Cannes selection that went all the way.
Right, well, unless... It'll be interesting to break this down a bit in terms of how you define a Cannes selection, right? Because if French Dispatch is a big movie, you could argue that was in the Cannes 2020 selection too.
They kept it till this.
And
year.
They kept it. That's right. Yeah. So it's going to take time to fully assess the impact of that selection.
We don't know if the Wes Anderson is a full fledged Oscar contender.
We don't
it could
know.
Be
that.
One of his lighter comedies.
A crowd pleaser.
So looking forward to it. I cannot wait. But that it isn't necessarily. An Oscar contender.
Yeah, and we don't have any animated films, so there's no Pixar movie. Obviously, they've done very well with Cannes. There's no Studio Ghibli type of entry. Some of us were speculating about Earwig and the Witch as a film that could be there. We haven't heard about
that
yet.
That might have been timing. I mean, it's possible that Luca could have launched if it had been a theatrical release. Now, Luca,
it's an open question.
Pixar is going straight to streaming with no surcharge.
Yep.
No theaters.
So yep, maybe that's an issue there.
They don't need Cannes anymore.
Yeah. I think it's also worth noting that a week before Cannes made this announcement, it's the head of the press office, Aida Belouid, she moved to the French bureau for Netflix. So we know that there is an ongoing process through which all of these people want to figure out a way forward, I think. But it's going to take time. It's just, we're never going to fully hear how these conversations are unfolding. We know that there's some back and forth going on in terms of finding common ground. Maybe Netflix gets there first. Maybe Disney gets there first. But as long as there's Cannes, there's going to be this pressure, I think, for people to try to understand, is this thing worth our time or not? Every year it's going to come up again and again. And I did like the point that Thierry made in an interview where he said that they chose to cancel last year and not just go online to have a couple screenings online. Whether or not, you know, movie going continues to be like the dominant mode that most of these things are consumed in, it's worth noting that when you put it in this context, it allows these movies to stand out in a way that they just don't as a virtual festival. They just don't.
There's no question. I mean, Venice got away with it. They happened to have a window where they could do a European version of a live in-person film festival. But if you look at the point I was sort of starting to make, the Another Round went on to be at a lot of other film festivals, and some of the movies here will have that. This will be the launch for their long-term Oscar trek through the festivals in the fall, which we are looking forward to having back, Telluride in Toronto, New York, in some version or another. But the Oscar movies, I mean, for example, Defy Bloods. If Defy Bloods had been at Cannes last year, it would have had a whole other profile beyond what it was able to accrue.
No, it's a good point.
With no film festivals.
It would
at
have
all.
Played really well there, I think, because it's such a wild movie.
And I think that there's any number of examples of films that, it, had they been given enough love at a festival, would have done much better.
Yeah, it's hard to fully explain it to people if you haven't actually been there or been in the position of someone like a journalist who has to process these things as they unfold. But you can feel the buzz and you could see it kind of trickle out of there. And I don't know how you, nobody's figured out in this past year how to fully replicate that. We've seen some good examples like Sundance. Of ways of doing it. But
it's
not the
same.
Same
as being in a room with other people. It just isn't. And just on the box office front, the Memorial Day weekend numbers were really good. It's sort of horrifying to think that over the, somebody was just saying this to me, over the past, since the beginning of 2021, there have been 5 weekend box office grosses for the total top 10 movies that passed the $25 million mark.
I was like anticipating something really embarrassing about that. I was like, we've heard so many terrible statistics.
It's so bizarre. And if you look at all the numbers, I happen to be looking at them all lately, it's just horrifying. I mean, there was a weekend there when, during the pandemic, when everything was shut down, when the total gross for all the movies in release in North America was under $1 million.
You know what? I think so. Quiet Place 2 did very well. I didn't expect it to have quite such a high rating on Rotten Tomatoes like it did. I didn't think it was that great of a movie. In fact, I was frustrated by it in parts, but it's a very strong theatrical experience, and Krasinski toured around.
Yeah, to see it in theater was really fun.
And he leaned into, you felt like this was an event movie traveling around and stuff. Like they did a South by Southwest hosted thing in Austin at the Paramount where the first one premiered its opening night. And like you could see it, like the buzz coming out of that stuff shows you that some of those tools are starting to return to movie going culture. You know, you could use pop-up screenings and drive enthusiasm and all that kind of stuff. And people want to go out and be entertained by big blockbusters, not necessarily Cannes movies, which is an argument again for having a big spectacle event like Cannes for movies that are hard to get out into the market. So next week, I think I'm going to see you.
Fingers crossed. Now, next week, I'm showing up in New York. We're going to hang out. We're going to do Tribeca.
We're going to party.
And we're going to see the Bourdain doc, and we're going to see Val, and we're going to see How in the Heights plays in a theater with people.
How exotic. Yeah, I can't wait. So I will see you on the East Coast, and rest easy, and safe travels. Bye.